After years of campaigns, warning labels, taxes, and more, the number of adults who smoke in the United States, the percentage of adults, is at a record low. But smoking has dropped more drastically for people with money and higher education levels. Over about 50 years, smoking dropped 83% for people with a college degree, only 39% for people who have completed some level of high school. That class and educational divide is changing the game for smoking cessation in the United States. Bruce Christensen joins me now. He's a senior scientist at UW-Madison's Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention. Bruce, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Is this new, this massive gap based on income and education when it comes to smoking?
I think the size of the gap is new every year because it's growing. So that if you look at the mid-60s when we started tracking this, there was no gap. And then just very consistently over the years, the gap is getting bigger and bigger and bigger every year. So we're going the wrong direction. We're not closing the gap.
What accounts for this big difference?
Well, that's an excellent question. And every good, excellent question probably has lots of different answers. One of which we know the tobacco companies target certain populations, so that's a piece of this. But it's also a more general phenomena that, you know, the tobacco control effort has been incredibly successful, as evidenced by the overall drop down to 15% from a high of 42%. And that reflects a lot of public programming efforts, raising taxes, protecting kids from secondhand smoke, Clean Air Acts, restricting advertising, having to free telephone quit lines, having medications that can help people quit. But the fact is, all those programs, by their nature, are always more effective on people who have resources, the haves, if you will, and less so on the have-nots, because the have-nots have less resources to bring to the table, so to speak. So there's all kinds of barriers that they have that are more prominent than the people who are better off.
Let's talk about medical access here for a moment. I saw part of the story, it looks like, is people who have access to a primary care physician, somebody they work with, are more likely to get smoking cessation help than, say, a lower-income person who might not have that regular doctor. Their only access is maybe in an emergency room. How important a part of the picture is that?
That's certainly an important piece, and you put it quite accurately. If you don't have health insurance, you often only have the wherewithal to get to emergency room urgent care when you have no choice. And that's not the best setting to have a provider deliver a tobacco intervention. They're preoccupied dealing with an urgent or emerging health crisis. And so it's best delivered by a primary care physician at a routine visit. But that's something that people with low incomes don't have access to. For example, just out today was an article that tracked the use of medications that can be attributable to the Medicaid expansion states. And they went up by 38%. So these would all be low-income now folks who, through the newer insurance programs, have access to medications that can help.
That's under the Affordable Care Act?
Yes.
Yeah. Did we see smoking rates change much with that increased access?
Too early to tell. If you look at the rate of declining in smoking, it's been a pretty consistent, slow lowering through the last 50 to 60 years. It did accelerate in the past 8 years, but there's been additional efforts in the communities, increased taxes, for example, that could explain some of that.
Now, as I understand it, one thing that seems not to work very well when it comes to smoking cessation is scolding, nagging, shunning type behavior of people who smoke. What have we learned about that?
I think that's true. And I think you can understand that when you realize that if you ask people if they want to quit, most will say, yeah, I'd like to quit, or I plan to quit someday, because most people have some at least general understanding that it's not good for health. And yet if you ask them, okay, well, then that's at a quit date, and all of a sudden that's not a very good idea, that sometime in the future is better. And so I think the negative punitive approach is not very productive. And actually re-stigmatizing it. And that's particularly relevant to this discussion because when you think about who's doing the smoking now, it's, you know, people out by the bus stops. It's low-educated, low-income workers. They already have a burden of stigma. And now to do it again, to say, well, you're one of those that haven't been able to quit, that's just an additional burden for them.
The burden of stigma and the burden of stress. People with in a lower income situation might have a precarious, obviously, financial position. That's stressful. They turn a lot of people who have smoked use it in times of stress. And as I understand it, quitting smoking is incredibly stressful itself. How do we deal with that stress cycle?
Yes, I think that's a good observation. The treatments overall work for across the entire population, so it really is a matter of freeing up the resources to really tailor things and target the people that are still remaining smoking, and then addressing, and part of that is addressing their stress level.
Bruce Christensen is with us, senior scientist at UW-Madison Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention, looking at why smoking is still a big problem for people with lower incomes, lower education levels. Also, we'll get into this in rural areas. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been or are you currently a smoker? Have you tried to quit? How has it gone? What was it like for you? If you have quit, what worked? And is this your story? Are you somebody at a lower income level and you're having trouble maybe accessing medication that could help you quit? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our conversation now with Bruce Christensen, senior scientist at UW-Madison Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention. We're looking at a class divide in adult smoking rates, rates overall going down in the United States, staying higher than I think anyone would like for people with lower incomes, lower education levels, often in rural areas. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Are you seeing this in your community? If you are in a lower income community, do you see a lot of tobacco ads on a billboard at the local corner store? Do you feel like you have the community support, the medical resources you would need to quit if you're a smoker? If you have quit, tell us what worked for you. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Bruce, let's talk about that advertising part of the story now. People in the lower income groups are more likely to smoke, and they're the more likely people to see advertisements.
Yeah, it's you know, again, the preference that we've had some really successful policies, but sometimes they have unintended consequences. So one good example of that is, you know, we by legislation have restricted where a tobacco can advertise. They can't sponsor TV shows, for example, anymore. Well, that has only allowed them then to put the resources in other types of advertising, one of which is we call point of sale, so they can advertise in places that are selling tobacco products. That's well and good. But then you ask, okay, so where are those places you can buy tobacco? And it turns out that if you look at the concentration of people who are in programs that sell tobacco, they're much more dense in zip codes made up of a higher proportion of people with low income. And that's, again, not intentional, but, again, the urban poor areas have a lot of mom-and-pop stores on the corners, and many of those will sell tobacco products, which means if you're a young child walking to your neighborhood school, you'll be going by and seeing a lot more seductive ads for tobacco.
How are we doing on youth smoking rates?
Actually, they're coming down quite nicely. They hit a peak around 2000, 2002. Increased again in the middle of the 2005, but lately they've been coming down, which has been really encouraging.
Do we have data on whether we're seeing a similar divide by income level, I guess, of the family for kids that we do for the adults that we've been talking about?
Yes, I think it mirrors that, reflects that quite similar.
Now, you mentioned proximity to ads in inner cities. Part of the story here is low-income rural areas, Native American communities sometimes seeing higher rates of smoking. What can we do to target resources to help in those areas?
Yeah, the barrier there is inherent to the rural areas would be access to health care that's convenient and easy to get to, which tends not to be the case. So we would need resources to deliver cessation programs in a convenient, kind of barrier-free manner, and that's always a challenge for rural health care.
Let's go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Joseph is with us now in central Wisconsin. Joseph, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to tell us about?
Well, I wanted to talk to you about quitting. I quit 27 years ago when I became a Christian, and I started looking at my life, and it made me examine my health issues. And so I quit smoking, doing drugs, and drinking 27 years ago.
Congratulations. And you're still quit now?
Yes, sir.
And I understand you told our producer you now help other people quit.
Yes, sir. I've become a pastor, and as a pastor, I meet people and talk with them about their life issues, and sometimes they're interested in quitting smoking. And I also have helped people in recovery.
Joseph, thank you so much for sharing that. Congratulations on quitting and now on helping other people. How important is that kind of community support, Bruce, whether it's from a pastor in Joseph's case or other community members?
Absolutely key, which, again, is another barrier faced by low income because they are more likely surrounded by other smokers because the prevalence is much higher. So we know one of the three key ingredients to be successful quitting is having good interpersonal support from peers, family, et cetera, in the community. And that's often not as prevalent and available in low-income areas.
Joseph, thanks for that call. We'll go next to Dick in Sioux City, Iowa. Hi.
How you doing?
Good. What's your story?
Well, I started smoking out when I was 12. I quit when I was 29 years old. Now I'm 70. I never smoked again. I used hypnosis. We had a psychologist that came into town. He was a Hispanic fella. It cost me $50. It took about half an hour. He used waking hypnosis and told me I'd never smoke again.
Well, and it turns out he was right. Thanks a lot for that call. Bruce, we've heard from our callers there. Cold turkey and hypnosis, state-of-the-art science-wise nowadays, what are the proven methods, the things that seem to work best?
The way to increase the odds of any particular quit attempt would be three things. I already mentioned one of them, which is having as much support as you can marshal. The second is very basic, practical behavioral coaching or counseling about how to get through an urge to quit, how to distract yourself when you have an urge, just some very basic skills because it does take some skill to quit. And the third is using one of the seven FDA-approved medications that will help take the edge off the urge to smoke.
And as I understand it, it can be people who try, quit for a bit, and then start again can feel really demoralized and have a hard time making that next effort. But that's really normal, right?
It is normal. Keep in mind that this nicotine addiction is a very difficult addiction to beat. Multiple tries are the norm, the most common. And you're right, demoralization is a problem because we know one of the best predictors of success is self-efficacy. That is the belief that I can do it this time. So what we would prefer people to do is when they have an experience that they've quit for some length of time and then they've lapsed, to take that as a success, an opportunity to learn, what did you encounter that was more than you had expected? Well, what could you do different next time? And then telling yourself that, okay, next time I know more, it'll be different this time.
And Bruce, let's get to what it's all about. As smoking rates have declined overall, how much of a difference has this made for our overall health?
Oh, just a tremendous difference. There's an amazing correlation between the graph that shows the decrease in smoking and the graph that shows the decrease in deaths from lung cancer, for example. There's about a 20-year delay. Shows up about 20 years later, but the lines are absolutely parallel, meaning you could just make a direct relationship between the fact that we have so relatively fewer smokers now and deaths from lung cancers is on the decrease. So it is still the number one preventable cause of death in our country.
That said, if this disparity between rich and poor continues in smoking, that's going to increase health disparities that are there for other reasons, right?
Yep. And we do believe that smoking rates in these populations is one of the big drivers of the overall health disparity.
And can you tell us, as we start to wrap up, what resources are there out there in Wisconsin for people looking to try to quit for the first time or the fifth time?
I would just draw quickly two things. One, like all states, we have a tobacco quit line that's free to every resident in Wisconsin. The number is 1-800-QUIT-NOW. They will provide free coaching and counseling, one of the two ingredients I talked about, as well as the support. And they also provide 2 weeks of free nicotine replacement product, the patch, the gum, or the lozenge. And that's not a full course, but that's enough to get somebody started. And the second resource is talking to a health professional, hopefully your primary care physician or nurse practitioner. They've all been well-trained to address tobacco as well.
Bruce, thanks a lot for joining us today.
It was a pleasure. Good luck to all your listeners who smoke.
That was Bruce Christensen, senior scientist at UW-Madison's Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention. He joined us to look at some recent data showing that smoking is still more common among low-income Americans, people with lower education levels, often people in rural areas. Still time for you to share your thoughts on that topic and maybe your own story as well. Head over to the Central Time Facebook page. Tell us if you smoke, are you trying to quit? If you did quit successfully at some point in your life, or if you're on a third or fourth or fifth try, good luck to you, and tell us all about it on the Central Time Facebook page.